Hello, it's Ed, and welcome to another episode of Transmission. Today, we're joined by Tom Palmer. Tom is the head of business development at Zenobē in network infrastructure. And Tom has over 15 years of experience in the energy sector. And we're going to spend today talking about how Zenobē think about battery storage. So, should you be putting storage alongside generation, for example, in Scotland? How have things like skip rates impacted the investment outlook? And we're going to front run some record-breaking news for Q1 of 25. What's really stuck with me from this episode is how the battery storage market has developed in phases. So going from focusing on frequency response services, going into wholesale markets, and then becoming more utilized within the balancing mechanism. Where will that go next? So do we go into further stability services, or do we kind of look to more co-location with renewable assets? I'd love to hear your thoughts in the comments, and if you're enjoying Transmission, please hit subscribe. Okay, let's jump in. Hello and welcome to another episode of Transmission. Today we are joined by Tom from Zenobē. Tom, welcome.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
And I'll come to you straight away. So who are you and who is Zenobē?
Yeah, so my name is Tom Palmer. So I head up the business development team in Zenobē in the standalone storage. With the sort of network infrastructure part of the business is effectively the battery storage focus. My team develop new batteries, storage solutions, focused on the business case, additional revenue streams that those batteries can achieve. And that's like the role of the team. Obviously, Zenobē is focused on building out large scale grid storage solutions. We're focused on building out over 1 gigawatt of large-scale batteries in Scotland to support the grid, but have bigger aspirations, obviously, to develop more.
Okay. And just to frame this conversation, so I think listeners to Transmission will have heard two previous episodes from Zenobē, one by Stephen on bus infrastructure and kind of early stage Zenobē. And I think we had Rob on more recently on Second Life storage. But we're obviously within this conversation mostly looking at storage assets, both within GB, and we might cover a little bit of ERCOT as well.
Yep. That was okay. Good. So yeah, so the Zenobē business is split into three elements. The one which is the bus infrastructure and solutions. The second is the network infrastructure, which is the grid scale storage. And then finally, there's Second Life. So it's reutilizing those batteries from the buses to basically use in mobile solutions with those.
Okay. And let's now start with perhaps some topical news. Blackkillock, what's the latest on Blackkillock?
So Blackkillock is a 200 megawatt storage project. So it's 2 hour duration, located in between Aberdeen and Inverness, at the Blackkillock substation. It's on a sort of vital part of the network between where you've got the interconnection coming down from Shetland and Viking Wind Farm flowing. You've got the offshore wind coming in, and then obviously that flowing down south. So it is our largest project to date. And effectively will be crucial to supporting the network in Scotland.
Yeah, and I think it will also be the largest in GB, right? So current largest is 100 megawatts, 200 megawatt hours lakeside, which is near Drax. I think we'll see that being broken by Blackkillock.
Yeah, so it'll be the largest at that point in time. Records are there to be broken, so I'm sure someone else will come along later, but yeah, it will be the largest at that point. But more importantly to us, it's also the first project that will be commercially providing grid forming a solution. So it's got grid forming inverters. The first time those have been deployed commercially, it has a stability contract with National Grid. So it's providing much more than battery storage has provided to date.
Okay, and let's come back to the grid forming side in a second. I think just on the date, so to timestamp today with the 9th of Jan, I think this episode will be going live in early Feb. So what's the status of Blackkillock?
So Blackkillock has gone through energization. It's in the final stages of commissioning. The reason that process takes a while to go through. Effectively, you're trying to get through all the grid compliance, all the testing with the manufacturers, which is Wärtsilä, SMA on site. So it's a quite a time consuming process, but because this project is the first grid forming inverters on the network commercially, it means there's extra testing required. It's different testing. Both National Grid is learning from the, or sorry, NESO is learning from this, as well as we are, and this will set a path for all future projects for their compliance of grid forming inverters.
Okay.
So it takes a while to get through that process. Obviously, you have to go through tests, doing full load, ramping, partial, all these kind of things. And then once that's all complete as well with the off-taker and all the software in place, then we go into full commercial operation.
Okay. Blackhillock, 200 megawatts, 400 megawatt hours. What does it do? Where does the revenue come from?
So the revenue comes from, with any storage asset, stacking across different revenue streams. So obviously that means wholesale market, trading energy there. It also may involve bidding into system services, the balancing services, sorry. So frequency response, all these kind of things. But the focus is really on the balancing mechanism. So for us, being based in Scotland, there is locational value from that asset being able to import during high wind in Scotland, and the current limitations on the network capacity that mean that all that wind is unable to flow over the network from south down to England and Wales where it is actually needed. So that's resulting in wind farms being turned off, and Blackhillock is able to effectively import for the 2 hours or longer at different megawatt ratings. And effectively export that later. So it's able to stop you turning off wind and provide a vital service to NESO as their role as system operator. But there's also, what's new about this is stacking additionally is the stability contract. So providing reactive power, providing inertia, short circuit level, that's vital to managing the grid when you've got such high renewable penetration and few thermal plants running in Scotland.
And in terms of those additional contracts, so is it around reactive power, short circuit level? Those are the two that it's targeting.
And inertia.
And synthetic inertia.
Synthetic inertia. Yeah. So effectively, those grid forming inverters allow a significant change from grid following inverters that are used on most storage projects today. Effectively and allows you to respond automatically on the reactive inertia requirements and provide extra stability on the network.
Yeah.
And that's really important when you've got all of the grid following inverters on renewable projects to date in Scotland.
Yeah. And this episode actually, I think, follows on from an episode we just released on synchronous compensators, where they provide kind of almost real inertia, so things that do physically spin. This is synthetic inertia, which is very similar, but has a slight gap between the event and the response time, which can be orders of milliseconds.
Yeah, we're talking milliseconds. Like it's having both technologies. Both can do the same things. The difference is a synchronous, whether you call it condenser compensator, it's a debatable topic, but effectively, with that, the primary service is providing inertia and short circuit and reactive power from those. With batteries, it's not about providing a one service. You are that Swiss Army knife, which has probably been used a million times on this podcast, but effectively, you're able to do that while trading active power. That's a very different role. And it means you're not investing in one asset to provide a service. You have an asset that's capable of providing multiple services.
Yeah.
And hopefully that can be, you know, as more gets tested, more gets rolled out, that should be lower cost to consumers.
Yeah, the critical thing is that you can pay for 80, 90% of the asset through the wholesale trading, and you don't have to pay for the whole asset to just get the synthetic inertia type response.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. And before we come back to the point around the location and Scotland and the balancing mechanism, which we will come to because it talks to skip rates, which we are definitely going to cover. Just the size of the asset. So 200 megawatts, 400 megawatt hours. Does that look, obviously that is record breaking for GB, and it will also be broken as sort of more assets come to market beyond it. Is the route to market different for a 200 megawatt, 400 megawatt hour asset?
It's it's not that the actual route to market agreement is necessarily that different. Obviously, it's a different risk appetite for off-takers in the market. But we're seeing that as that market develops, people are willing to take on more. The more renewables deploy, the more storage you need. So as a hedge in someone's who's an off-taker who may have renewables in the portfolio, you need more storage. So I don't think it's a natural transition as things get bigger and there's more renewables. Does it mean the off-take agreement is more difficult? Not necessarily. You can also manage the size to be able to participate in different markets that you don't want to put in 200 megawatts into quick reserve on its own. You might want to put different parts of the asset into different markets. And we've done that with other assets like Capenhurst, where it's split into different BMUs and each is providing services in different markets.
Okay. And perhaps, actually, you just mentioned Capenhurst. It would be good just to run through kind of what Capenhurst is.
Yeah, Capenhurst is our 100 megawatt project, first project connected onto the transmission network battery project. That's slightly different. It has a reactive power contract with National Grid. NESO now. It is only a 1 hour duration asset, but it's located sort of just outside Liverpool and been operational for over a year now.
Okay, thanks. And then just, maybe just like one comment on the 200 megawatts, 400 megawatt hours. It's not unusual for the GB system, right? We have many power stations that are 1 to 2 gigs in terms of size, in terms of the gas fleet that already exists. So maybe we shouldn't be nervous about going into the 200 megawatts. And certainly people like CIP have got 500 megawatt projects coming through, as well as bigger projects being planned by others as we get close to 2030 and beyond.
Yeah, I don't think there's any reason to be worried about it. They're not set up that necessarily if you lose part of the plant through an outage, you lose all of the asset. They're set up to be able to manage parts of it on different strings and manage outages that way. So we shouldn't be worried that, you know, the bigger asset causes more problems for the grid. You know, it's still a significantly lower than a Sizewell C coming or a Hinkley in reality. But they are getting bigger. You know, it's economies of scale is driving that. That's a significant part. So we will get bigger storage, but I think that's probably needed.
I think there's a Edwards and Sanborn site in California that's 1 gig, 3 gigawatt hours that's live at the moment. So yeah, the blueprint absolutely exists for those really big sites.
Yeah, and there's projects out there who have got planning for over a gigawatt in GB already. It's coming.
Superb. And then I think just to pivot slightly, so you mentioned that you're located in Scotland, and one of the big parts about being located in Scotland is being dispatched into locational services. Today, that comes through the balancing mechanism in terms of any kind of locational dispatch. Mm-hmm. That is an area where there's been a lot of conversation recently. Would you like to talk about kind of Zenobē's experience with the balancing mechanism to date and what has been changing over the last year and kind of where you see it going?
Yeah, so we have another site in Scotland called Wishaw. So Wishaw is a 2 hour, 50 megawatt battery located just outside Glasgow. That went live. And again, the premise is the same, basically absorbing power during those high wind and helping to manage constraints on the network. We started seeing the challenges with that site and this infamous term across the industry of skips. So effectively, even though that asset was cheapest in the market to be able to import, it wasn't being taken. So it was effectively being skipped over in favor of other options. Those other options were generally just turning off the wind. So obviously that is not good for us. It's not good for any other participant in the industry. So we decided to set up a coalition of storage developers who are facing similar issues with managing constraints in Scotland and being skipped over on those effective constraint skips. We've been working with NESO on trying to improve that, But we decided to obviously push it forward, raise it as an issue, focus on the constraint skips. The reason constraint skips, you know, there's two types of skips. You've got energy skip, which is not driven by the wind in an area where you've got a constraint skip. The constraint skip to us is an easy win. Instead of turning off the wind, which is not good for anyone, it means less renewables, it means more wear and tear on the wind farm. Instead, you absorb first in the battery. So that was our focus. That's a quick win. And, you know, in this focus of meeting 2030, the more you can do quick saves money for consumers and it's able to deliver that change. So we are focused on constraint skips. We've been working closely with Nesso to identify those skips. Obviously, they've been doing their own work. There's changes in the software coming, but it's really important we get this resolved. Like, storage has been a massive success, right? So we're over 4 gigawatts now. You probably know a better number. But that hasn't required anyone giving a subsidy. Okay, apart from maybe capacity, small bit of capacity market revenue. But everyone's bidding into that. But it hasn't required anyone going, right, we're going to give money to build out this. The market's developed from an offtake perspective. The technology's got cheaper. We're developing more and we're not asking for more. So we don't, you know, it's a great thing. But if you have these issues in the market around skips, all it does is send a bad signal to investors. You know, we need investors to support us on this transition. And if you've got these barriers in the way, it will just change their position on should we invest in this.
Yeah.
And I think given Clean Power 2030, what we're now talking 23 to 27 gigawatts, we can't have these things get in the way of delivering and building out. So it's really important we move fast, we resolve it, and hopefully we're in a better position.
Yeah, and loads in there. So 23 to 27 gigawatts, what's that number?
So that is of battery storage to be built out in GB market by 2030 under the government's Clean Power 2030 target.
Yeah, which would be a lift from today's battery capacity, which is over 4 gigs, as you say, 4.7, I think, is our number, which is pretty incredible, right? Given that 10 years ago, this was essentially zero. And as you say, pretty much all of it is built under a zero subsidy regime, kind of unlike a lot of other techs coming to market.
Yeah.
And I think, actually, maybe let's just talk about that for a second. Just on the CM, we've kind of stumbled into it. But today is the 9th Jan. The 8th of Jan was a particularly kind of tight period in the GB market. And actually, if you think about the battery fleet, there was something like 1.5 gigs of batteries were turning onto discharge during that kind of peak period. When you take that 4.7 gigs, it actually gets derated in the capacity market. So effectively says, oh, look, this, it's not worth as much as its capacity rating. And that derating is something like 10 to 15% gets taken through. Is that something that you think might change in the future?
It would be nice that I don't think the methodology is correct. There's been iterations from Nesso on changes to that derating. But I think we need to use the evidence of how assets are performing in the market. And hopefully the events of yesterday kind of demonstrate how it is performing and that contribution. So I think it's something you have to keep looking at. We can't just take this view that it's, you know, the methodology that we put in before storage is deployed is the correct methodology that needs to be used going forward.
Yeah. As we get more data, update the assumptions exactly. We have. And particularly because when those tight periods happen is not something that is kind of written in stone, right? So those tight periods could happen during winter peaks, as we saw yesterday, but they also could happen during summer periods. And it's interesting to get data on which techs were available and how they actually reacted to those periods exactly. At those times. Yeah, I think it's really interesting. Let's go back to the piece around skip rates, because I think one of the most interesting parts in this is, as you say, it's kind of being able to get investors to have confidence that those assets, when they're in certain locations, will be called upon. Do you think that story is landing in terms of the progress made so far?
I think it's landed. I believe even the Prime Minister now knows what skips are, which is reassuring. So it is. We can't emphasize enough how it impacts the business case. You know, balancing mechanism is so important for storage assets. The message has landed. It's not going to be quick. You know, we understand that there are software solutions needed to be put in the control room. But we shouldn't forget storage first entered the balancing mechanism in 2018. So we're quite a long way now from the first time entered. Yes, it wasn't as active then, or there are other revenue streams, but that says something about how we design a system if we haven't planned ahead and understood the role of storage and ensuring that markets are open to participate and confidence is there.
And I think actually that kind of comment about batteries have been in the market since 2018, obviously really in earnest in the BM since like November 2022-ish, so kind of 2 and a bit years in earnest in terms of wanting as much dispatch as possible. I think what you're talking about in terms of NESO being ahead of schedule and having the capability ahead of time is really important, because when you look at things like demand side response, or maybe from the bus side or from the second life battery side, like being able to use those assets through something like demand side response to be really effective in the balancing mechanism, that's absolutely something we don't want to leave kind of out of the market for a couple of years whilst we kind of get the house in order type thing. So yeah, definitely a call to get
we
that.
Can't afford to. If you want to hit these 2030 targets, that means storage, DSR, other technologies. Like, we're not saying DSR isn't treated unfairly at the moment either. There are significant issues there. Obviously our focus is on storage, and there are specific requirements that need to be dealt with around, it is a limited duration asset, so the systems need to be in place. But it's also about making sure the control room staff are aware and kind of proactively using it. To me, it's at that point where we have to proactively take the decision to use storage to make sure that we are pushing it forward. Mm-hmm. So that means sometimes favouring it. At the moment, we kind of favour the old thermal technology, even though we might know storage is cheaper. That seems the wrong way around. Mm. We need to be a bit more proactive and go, let's take the storage first. Oh, actually, maybe it wasn't the right solution. Mm. But, you know, that's what you have to work with.
Yeah. And I think in context of kind of the work that NESO are doing, I would say NESO have got a plan in place that runs from 23 to 27. We're roughly halfway through that. We've seen improvements, but I would say storage is probably being dispatched around half the level that we're seeing for some of those thermal assets. And so there's still a lot of that road to go in terms of further improvements to happen to storage assets.
Yeah. And I think what we want to see is targets put on NESO. You know, Ofgem has that role as the regulator to set clear targets on getting to a point where we're not discriminating against storage, but also other technologies. And we're not at that point yet. The program that's put forward by NESO is good. There are significant improvements coming, but some of them are quite slow. The code process that governs some of these changes takes a long time, sometimes too long. Yep. When we could go faster. Every day we don't have it, we're costing the consumer money.
Yes.
So that should be at the forefront.
And I think going back to your point around investor confidence as well. So if you want to give investors confidence, saying there's a program of work and it's in play and it's improving things is nice, but your kind of call for a target means that anyone active in the space could say, actually, this is the target that we're working towards. And therefore, like, an investor can see that and can understand it and can say, yeah, okay, I see where this is going. And so I can commit capital to this tech. And then, as you say, that kind of comes through in terms of lower consumer costs.
Exactly. It's, you know, we have to explain to our investors why this skip rate's happening. We only have limited insight. We're not in the control room on a day-to-day basis. We have to explain it. It impacts their thought process, their decisions. So it's really vital to get it resolved as quickly as possible and build confidence.
Yeah. And maybe moving on from skip rates, I'm sure we could do skip rates for longer. But more broadly, right now, with the Labour government and Clean Power 2030, we have a really big push on all things renewables, all things storage. That's kind of resulting in a big movement or change in terms of regulation and market structure. What else is out there that you are looking at as something that could be supportive for storage?
So it's for us, it's less about what's supportive of storage in the market than change at the moment. It's kind of the things that are sitting there unresolved or not been factored in the true sort of benefit of storage. So for us, we build transmission network projects. There's good reasons we do that, to provide the services we do. But effectively, we pay for the cost of the transmission network. Now, we put forward a change that would have benefited storage in what was called a code modification process that sort of governs that. But unfortunately, it was rejected by Ofgem. But at the moment, storage doesn't get the value of the import it provides on the network. We're charged based on export. We're even charged as if we're a carbon plant. So we're classed as conventional carbon, which is an irony in itself. But effectively, we're not getting the benefit from how we behave on the network, with the ability to import during constraints and then export after a constraint, for example. So that needs looking at. There is other code modifications happening, which, you know, terrible names to people with numbers called like P462, but these are changes to the market and that affect how we operate in the market. Now, some of them have good intentions, but at a time when you're trying to build out, what you don't want is substantial changes happening and uncertainty and long processes. Obviously, there's REMA. No one still knows what's happening with zonal versus the national market price. Again, that just provides uncertainty in everyone's mind and causes more challenges. Like if you're agreeing an offtake agreement with your battery, you have to think about how these interplay into that agreement. How are you going to protect yourself? Mm. These are all thoughts that you need to go through. And different people have different levels of risk. So it's kind of managing that.
I mean, just to that point, right, those three. So you've just talked about TNUOS charging, so transmission network use of system charges. So anyone connected to the transmission network, what are they charged? So that might vary over the coming years. You've then got your P462, which is essentially changing how you will be bidding into the balancing mechanism, or how other assets bid into the balancing mechanism, which again changes your kind of your charging price and your discharging price in future. And then you've also got REMA as well, which is a sort of national versus zonal discussion. And so are you going to be working with a national wholesale price and a locational balancing mechanism, or are you going to be working with a zonal market, and then however that balances between those zones kind of going forward? And so you're saying that every single kind of contract you design on route to market almost has to kind of consider options on either of those sides, or do you kind of just bundle it all into like one giant kind of change of law type rule?
Well, you have to try and cover everything, but not everyone's willing to take that risk. So it's a long process. It adds more complexity to trying to negotiate agreements, but also a lot of the older, you know, we talk about changes to the market. There's lots of contracts out there, existing services, existing offtake. You know, if you start changing things, you're going to have to open up all of those agreements, have disputes, legal fees, all of these kind of things. So there's lots of changes and implications from it.
Doesn't necessarily mean that the change is wrong, right? So as you were just arguing for TNUOS, if the change is needed, the change is needed.
Yeah, that's fair. So if it's needed, then yes, it should be pushed forward, but it has to also be, you have to demonstrate with evidence.
Okay, and maybe just kind of last point on this. One thing we've seen in the market, certainly kind of moving over the last few years, is that early battery storage projects were mostly focused around kind of profit share type structures. More and more we hear around structured products, so things that include, say, floors, or particularly last year, tolls in the Octopus and Gresham, and then we also had the Penso Power and Shell toll. kind of this amount of regulatory change at the same time as people wanting to put fixed numbers on things for fixed periods of time, does that make it kind of more or less impossible to do, or is that?
It's not impossible. Obviously, it is happening. Those agreements, that market is developing. Like, tolls didn't exist, okay, a long time ago. You know, they've come from gas industry and gas CGTs, where tolls were quite common actually in GB market. Well, not common, but there were a few. Now that market's developing, the worst thing you can do is start getting in the way of it and causing more concern. If you can develop that toll market further, and again, people will still want floors as well. If you can develop that, provide that certainty, then people are willing to do it. And obviously that makes hitting 2030 target possible.
Okay, great. I think let's move into the ancillary services part of the discussion. So obviously people expect batteries to be providing frequency response services, and much of the fleet has been doing that for a long time. You mentioned a couple of other services that Capenhurst as well as Blackhillock have been providing. Let's talk a little bit about those services as a refresher, but then what does the right design of those system, those services look like going forward?
Yeah, so I guess there's different types. There's a lot of different types of service. Obviously, there's the frequency services that are most common now, which is effectively rapidly providing active power onto the network, exporting, importing quickly as a way of effectively providing synthetic inertia. You then have your reserve products, your quick reserve, which are obviously vital in terms of being there to provide reserve on the network when required. We're now moving, I guess, to other services, and NESO is reforming some of those services. So reactive power is a good example. Providing that reactive power onto the network is also a requirement. Everyone gets focused on megawatt hours, but you need megavars in that reactive power to support the network. It's required. A lot of that has been traditionally provided, again, by thermal plants historically, but there is a specific requirement for that reactive power in certain locations. So Capenhurst has a reactive power contract to provide that in the Merseyside area.
It feels like a maturing of markets, right? So when storage first comes into the market, it generally does frequency response, so very short bursts of power, keep grid frequency where it should be. Second phase is kind of the megawatt hours start being used and you start seeing energy balancing services coming in. And then as people get more confidence in terms of what storage can do, some of these additional services, some of the megavars provision, start to come into the market. Coming back to the question, what do you think the right market design looks like for those? How are you getting the right signal to know where to build them?
Yeah, so I guess NESO started with this approach of pathfinder contracts, which is great. You know, it's been one of the first system operators to deploy those kind of pathfinder projects. They set the tone for where you want to go, right? From that, you then start, you might have to transform them into more structured markets where it's kind of and that's what NESO is doing with this four year ahead contracts, then a year ahead, which is currently in the process of offering out those agreements. So recently gave a year minus one voltage and a year minus one stability contracts. Now we're moving into even shorter term. So effectively day ahead markets for these. So that has been the natural progression, you know, moving from Pathfinder through to day ahead. Mm. And that's great. That just provides more optionality for storage to participate in all these different markets. Mm. So yeah, that's the kind of natural transition really.
And I think there's also definitely a message in there for kind of other grid operators in terms of how that's been done within GB, in terms of being able to get the most out of your storage fleet. In terms of, as someone who has been investing but also operating those assets, you've kind of seen those services, you've seen how they've been developed through from pathfinders into sort of day ahead markets, and broadly speaking it's been a pretty successful process.
Yeah, I think it's been successful. There are still things to work out. I think there still needs to be a bit of innovation, a bit of understanding how storage works. We've tried to work closely with NESO as well as others have, to try and inform them how storage behaves in some of these markets, because we're still probably not at a point where you're capturing the full value from them. You know, also if you set the market design that it's quite stringent, that's going to limit participation. If you can be a little bit more flexible in that to accommodate the fact that storage is more dynamic, it's participating in other markets, it does need to move around between different markets, then that can bring lower costs to consumers. But it means taking a slightly different view on your traditional procurement, being a bit more flexible, understanding how storage works, and working with developers to kind of open up and unlock some of these.
So maybe an example of that is instead of procuring things on, say, a monthly basis, going down to a more near-term procurement where you're procuring on maybe a half-hourly or hour basis will allow storage to kind of swap in between markets as they see fit.
Yeah, exactly. It's not about, you don't want to lock storage into a specific commitment too much. Like, yes, Nesso will need certain commitments to meet their requirements, but if you can be a little bit more flexible and say, okay, we're not going to lock you into or restrict you providing this other service, and we're going to do it as close to real time or near to real time as possible, then that just provides the ability to do more services.
Yeah, it's super interesting. This is very much the cutting edge of like, how can we squeeze the most out of these assets that we are now adding to the system? And if we can get Clean Power 2030 done, I think a lot of it will come from being able to squeeze more out of these Swiss Army knives, as you mentioned.
And I think that's where Clean Power 2030 is great. It's all focused on megawatts at the moment. What's interesting is where it will go with the strategic spatial energy plan, setting this blueprint. It's not just about megawatt storage. Is not just there to do that. It also provides this reactive power inertia, as Blackhillock will be doing, and that allows you to not run thermal plants as much. So obviously the target is 5% load factor on a CCGT. If you can provide these other services from storage and synchronous compensators, condensers, you can effectively reduce that running further. We're still paying a large amount to thermal plants to come on and provide inertia, reactive power, although short circuit level in certain locations.
We saw that all through this summer, right? That we had sort of £0 pricing, almost negative pricing, and the gas fleet didn't drop below sort of 2.5 to 3 gigs, which essentially is saying those gas units, they're running for something else. They're not running on the basis of the wholesale price. They're running on the basis that they're providing other services.
Yep.
And so that as soon as we can open that out to kind of low carbon options, then all of a sudden we can turn off those plants.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. And let's maybe go to one last area. So I just wanted to talk a bit about the cap and floor, which is around long duration energy storage. How does Nobi think about long duration energy storage? How do you think about the cap and floor?
Yeah, so we're technology agnostic. We will effectively look at what the market needs, what actually makes commercial sense, and we will develop that. The LDES scheme has been pushed through ferociously as a scheme. We understand the need for long duration. You know, there is long events, for example, and constraints that require long duration storage. So there are elements where it's needed. The concern from our side is that we're pushing through this scheme quite quickly. No one, at no point has it properly been assessed the impact on the short duration market. And I think there is a statutory obligation for Ofgem to actually do an impact assessment, but it's not been done. So what we'd like to understand is really much more clarity about how the two markets interact. You want 23 to 27 gigawatts in Clean Power 2030. I think you want maybe 1 to 3 gigawatts of additional LDES. So by changing one, you're impacting the other. And the problem is if you start pushing through policy quickly, what always happens is you end up with unintended consequences. You could be the best consultant analyst in the world, but trying to understand the impact of introducing a policy on all the other markets, getting it correct, is really difficult. And we need to do that impact assessment, understand how that's going to work, what are the markets that LDES is going to participate in. We're not saying we don't need LDES. but I don't think it's been thought through on the impact. And that's the big risk we face is, again, it's another thing to explain to your investors. How much elders are they going to procure? We don't know. How is it going to affect your market? We don't know, because no one's done it. So these are things we need to consider.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's definitely required. And to kind of to flesh that out a little bit, I think if there's a kind of no cap on the elders, you might end up, instead of having 3 gigs, you might have 6 or 10 come through. And that obviously has a ramification for the short duration storage that's both on the system, but also the short duration storage to come. And how valuable is it for a consumer to build a load of 8 or 10 hour storage if that is not the thing you need for dealing with 80-90% of the storage requirements that you see within day?
And it's a locational aspect how it interplays. Like, you know, if that LDES is in Scotland, it's predominantly going to be used for constraint management. Ultimately, you're paying for LDES, you're paying for a constraint management because we don't have enough network. Now, is that LDES going to participate in an hour duration constraint? Yes. Yeah. But hang on, the storage is also going to do the hour. One is protected, one is not. There doesn't seem that alignment. And this is despite, I think, the regen LCP analysis that was done kind of said, actually, it's more beneficial having it in England than Scotland. But most of the pump storage is in Scotland. And we're also, at the same time, trying to go through this spatial plan and this centralized network planning for how the transmission network will look. So we've kind of going, we want all this LDES, but we haven't done those blueprint strategic network analysis yet. So it seems the wrong way around. We're pushing it ahead of doing the proper analysis we need. So we'd certainly encourage slow down a bit. You know, there's been a big change in trying to get through policy, trying to get things done. We understand that. But if you do it, it risks unintended consequences. Yeah.
And also when you can define what you need and then having a kind of a market approach where people then bid in to demonstrate that in the cheapest possible way, generally gets you some pretty good results. And so, you know, we've seen that, for example, in frequency response, where a market requirement has been set, then the battery fleet has come in, outcompeted gas by something like 80% reduction in costs for consumers. And surely we want to kind of try and find that again. I think one thing that's also kind of coming up within the elders piece is that they're looking for, say, 6 to 10 hours, but they want that 6 to 10 hours at rated power. You referenced this earlier today around Black Hillock, so 200 megawatts, 400 megawatt hours. That is a 2 hour system, but it could also be a 6 hour system, right?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So like, I think Ofgem is now proposing an 8 to 10 hour maybe for the sort of tranche one of the elders scheme, which is the big scale elders stuff. Storage, battery storage can effectively do that duration if required. It just means derating your power further and providing for longer.
A consumer doesn't care whether it's a rated power plant or whether it's a derated power plant running for 8 hours. It's irrelevant.
Exactly. And Nesso as system operator would have the ability in theory to take different plants, combine them to provide that constraint over a longer period and support it. So we don't see it as restrictive. You know, I think your analysis has shown that battery storage is more competitive potentially than a pump storage at maybe 6, maybe even 8 hours now with CapEx changes. So it's changing so much as well. It's difficult to go, right, we're going to commit to 30-year contracts on elders for pump storage or whatever. It's quite a risk, especially for the small scale duration projects. I think if it's a longer duration, I think it's a clearer business case.
Yeah, so you're saying if the work is done and there's a very clear need for an 80-hour storage system, let's say, it's quite clear that that doesn't get provided by the market as designed today. And so there's a need for some sort of intervention. But when we're looking at 6 or 8 hour systems, that absolutely could come from lithium systems. Very difficult to design policy really well, as you say, with the cost changes we saw in the last year. But as long as you leave an open market, then you should be getting in the lowest cost solution to that.
Exactly. Like, yeah. You know, I guess an 8 hour solution, just, I don't know, 8 hour pump storage. Personally, I guess I struggle. That seems the right decision. But if Ofgem is assessing and has the correct data in that LDES scheme and goes, actually, the 6 hour duration is no more effective than a battery storage solution, it shouldn't give an LDES contract, right?
Yeah.
I hope that's transparent. I don't know.
Yeah, we shall see. I mean, as long as people are kind of looking at consumer costs and that's the key element of it, then hopefully the right decision should be arrived at. And obviously they should also look at other markets as well to see what decisions other people are taking around how do they manage 6 or 8 hour duration storage questions. Okay, that broadly takes me on to the last two questions I want to ask. So one is on, is there anything that you would like to plug?
I don't think there's anything plug we're developing, we're building. One of the things we're always looking for is obviously good people. We're often recruiting as we grow, as we do more. And, you know, the supply chain from the skills perspective of having good people, it's a growing market. There's an opportunity for people to grow and be involved in it and shape it and develop themselves. So always looking for good people is probably the only key thing I push.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely worth plugging. And then the second part, so do you have a contrarian view? Do you have something that you believe that you think that the majority of the market doesn't?
I don't think I have I often have strong views, maybe. I think probably the only area where I think is maybe over-optimistic is on co-location. I think there's a lot of talk about it. I think it does make sense in certain circumstances, maybe with solar, getting the sizing right. But to assume it's always the best thing to do, is it best from location on the network? Just because the costs might be lower from sharing infrastructure doesn't mean you're putting in the right place to get system benefits overall. You know, if you're providing that inertia or reactive power, putting an extra solar farm might not be the best place. It might be, but I think all these kind of things...
It's a really good point, right? So I think people tend to think in terms of megawatt hours, as you were saying earlier. Like, so people are megawatt hours based, and you think, okay, this is what the solar profile looks like, this is what the storage profile looks like around it. But to your point, if you're not thinking about that, but you're thinking about kind of constant inertia type provision, then actually co-location probably isn't the right the right solution, particularly if you're co-locating with solar in Scotland.
Maybe some of this will come out of the sort of strategic plans that are being worked on the network, and there'll be a bit more clarity. But I think it's really important not just to think about everything as megawatt hours. There are the services storage provides that are vital to the network, and getting the right location, sending the signals, as you were talking about, designing the markets that enables us to do more.
Tom, that's a really good place to leave it. Thank you very much for coming on to Transmission. You've been a fantastic guest. We hope to have Zenobi back on again soon.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.